This podcast may contain language that's not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Today, we're going over Four Weddings and a Funeral, Part 4. So if you haven't seen it and don't want us to ruin it for you, you may want to pass on this one, and we'll catch you next time, except it's a 10-part series, so it'll be a while. You should just really watch it on Hulu or listen to us.
In order, please.
Yes.
Hey, gentle listeners.
Are you ready
for one dry kiss? And four weddings and a funeral all rolled up into this one teeny tiny 10-part series? I am your host, Tamara. Oh, wait, I can't introduce myself. I got to introduce you. Gosh darn it. Yeah, see what happens when we change things up. I am here with my beauteous co-host who will be the maid of honor at my wedding and hopefully not the pallbearer at my funeral because she's got to go first because can't live without a crinetting.
Did you do the
Welcome to One Dry Kiss, our cussy irreverent love letter to rom-com series? No, but there it is now.
And I am here with the glimmering, glistening, glorious Tamara Cosio, who, of course, if I ever get married first, I actually need someone who is suitable to marry. We'll get into that later. She would be right there standing next to me in a supporting role, not in a getting married role. Thank you.
And she would not be conducting a maid of honor speech because she totally messes up on the intro every single time, so she cannot be trusted.
Oh, I totally trust you. You would make people laugh. You would make people cry. It would be amazing. It would be tender. It would be hilarious, and I would love it. No pressure.
You know what's not hilarious is this episode, part 4 of Four Weddings and a Funeral. It's actually the funeral episode, and it's a little bit of a downer.
Man, I was like tearing up while I was watching it. And I was like, my sister died suddenly. Yeah, it was fun. Good time was had by all.
Yeah. No. Okay. Well, good time is had by all except us. And, you know, although we do recommend that you listen to these in order, you might want to pass on this one if you're having a bad day. Just like Corinne, we had a little bit of excitement right before we started recording because she was getting notifications on her phone while I was in the bathroom. And I was like, what's going on? What's going on, Corinne?
My phone was blowing up. It was like, bling, 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 bling. Apparently somebody has a card in my name that is tied to my bank account, but not one of my current cards. And I was getting all of these notifications from my credit union, bless their beautiful hearts, about charges getting denied on the card. So, And then after this flurry of, they tried to pull out $500, they tried to pull out $200, they tried to pull out $300, they then texted me and were like, hey, are these charges yours, Y or N? And I was like, N, enter, done.
I know. I was like, you can go ahead and respond, Corinne. I will wait.
Yeah. Oh, and also, last night, I had a nightmare. It was great. It was fantastic. So, I mean, I was sleeping well until 2 a.m. when I was awoken by a woman yelling at, I'm guessing, a man, to get the fuck out of her house, to give her back her phone, to leave, to leave, to leave. And behind my bedroom window faces out into an area where it's all of the apartments that I am in face out into that area. And also several like multi-unit places, like there's a kind of a parking lot area with some garages and several multi-unit buildings there. And I'm like, okay, I have no idea where this is coming from. At first, I thought it was my upstairs neighbor. It was not my upstairs neighbors, but because I was just hearing it out in the back area. And so, like, I'm concerned about this woman, but I have, like, no idea what's going on. I have no idea where this voice is coming from, and I don't know what to do. And ultimately, I did nothing. Sorry, people who are like, you're going to do the right thing. I didn't know what the right thing was. And
yeah,
it was a complicated situation. If I had known, like, oh, it's an apartment here or whatever, I would have been more inclined to possibly call the police or something like that. But then you have to worry about, oh, well, if they're black, like what kind of, you know, it's just like a whole thing. So I didn't know what to do. even though this person was not leaving, she seemed to be okay and handling the situation enough. However, this went on for quite a while. I went back to sleep and I ended up dreaming about a serial killer coming after me and my family. So that was fun. And then when I woke up in the morning and left for work, I found out that that person was in our apartment complex because there was like some stuff like on the first floor, kind of in front of sort of a doorway. And then I was like walking out and there was like a random Pokemon card. I like open the gate and I look out like right by like where the intercom is. And there's like chonies and a bag and Pokemon cards. And I was like, somebody did get kicked out last night. They did leave. Okay.
That's funny. I got to get not my wallet, not my belongings. I got to get my Pokemon cards in my underwear and then I'm out.
Yeah.
Priorities.
I know. I took a picture of it. I'm just like going to take a quick glance at the picture to see. Here we go. Some hats, a backpacka, one slipper, one dress shoe, chonies, Pokemon cards.
Okay, I can picture it now. So this person gets kicked out. They're wearing one dress shoe, one slipper, underwear on top of their clothes, and they're making it rain with Pokemon cards on their way out of your security case.
You know, that person had enough time where they should have just gotten the fuck out of there. So, like, it was on them that they had to, like, flee for the hills because I was just like, dude, it's been over an hour. Leave. Like, I don't care what's going on. You just got to go. Sleep in your car. I don't care. Just, like, come back to this tomorrow when, you know, like, whatever. Pack a little backpack of what you need and just get the fuck out. And give her back her fucking phone.
And surprisingly, what he needed is Pokemon cards.
Yes. Maybe what I should have done was, since I knew that they were down, now I know that they were downstairs, I should have gone downstairs and been like, hey, dude, hey, bruh, you want to play some Pokemon with me? We can just like...
We can go catch them all.
Yeah.
Wait, is that what the cards are for? I don't think so.
Yeah, exactly. Catch them all.
Well, I told you about my very unusual dream last night.
Yes.
Oh, great. The podcast where we discuss our dreams. Mm-hmm. This is exciting. Don't you all love this part of our episode? Yeah.
There's some people who have a particular pet peeve about people sharing about their dreams. I am not one of those people. Please do tell.
I know. I think it's pretty because that seems to be like, oh, great. A reoccurring theme in other podcasts. Like, oh, great. We're talking about dreams. I'm sure everyone is riveted. And it's short, succinct, and sweet. I had 18 contact lenses in my eye that I forgot about.
Oh.
And spent a copious amount of time trying to get them out of my eye.
Yeah, but didn't you tell me you were in competition with the another person who had 24 in their eye that they forgot about?
I read an article somewhere where it said this elderly woman apparently was really bad about putting in and taking out her contact lenses and had mistakenly shoved 24 contact lenses into her eye that somehow got lodged and then they had to be surgically removed. So in my dream, Corinne was there and I pridefully told her, well, at least it wasn't 24. I only had 18 contact lenses in my eye.
Well, then.
I don't have a problem because it wasn't 24.
It's a good day for Tamara. She only had 18 contact lenses stuck in her eyes.
Mm. Yeah, but it was still traumatizing.
Yeah.
Oh, Lord. You know what else is traumatizing is that I listened to our last episode because we're a couple of weeks behind.
Mm-hmm.
It was episode 2 and we are recapping our lovely vacations. And I'm like, am I ever going to finish my portfolio? Is Corinne ever gonna finish organizing her apartment? Because that's like the ongoing saga of both of our lives for probably like a year now.
Good times.
Yeah, I know. I heard that and I got a little sad. Although, you know, it's gonna cheer me up. It's this episode. Yeah.
You know what? We're gonna put the fucking fun in funeral. Okay.
Okay. I'm going to hold you to that because I'm just like nodding at you with a big, oh, really, are we look on my face right now. Is that right?
Uh-huh. Yeah, totally. Holiday, celebrate.
I'm trying to think of a catchy song that I can incorporate the word corpse into, and I'm not having a lot of success. So let's just go into the recap, Corinne. Can you please recap a cap cap, recap a pap pap what happened last week on Four Weddings and a Funeral?
Why, yes, I can, Tamara. Last week on Four Weddings and a Funeral, ODK style, a bunch of shit happened. So let's break it down. Ainsley's parents cut her off, so she now suddenly needs to support herself. Also, she did not end up getting married, so there's that. How does she cut costs? Obviously, no more bottled water, and she finally works up the courage to fire the patently useless Tony One, who was too busy outside vaping to help her when she was choking on a rice cake inside her store. Maya goes from leaving an interview with conservative politician Andrew Aldridge in a huff.
Huff!
Finagling a job interview with cool liberal politician Purse Nighthall, thanks to Gemma's husband Quentin, being sexually harassed by Purse, and finagling a job with Andrew Aldridge. Yay!
What a complicated and sad circle.
Uh-huh.
That is.
Yeah. She is bomb ass at her job, and that's how she managed to get back in Andrew Aldridge's, quote, good graces. Cash quits his job to pursue acting, gets a callback for a role, but ditches the callback and unquits his job when his dad, Haroon, unexpectedly ends up in the hospital with serious health problems. Yay! Show him the old razzle-dazzle, razzle-dazzle him. Craig and Zara are donezo, and Craig tells the rest of his friends, I'm like, yeah, because this episode is so cheery, like,
I'm like reading off this shit. Than this one. It's cheerier than this one.
I don't know. I think there's more hope in this one than there was in the last one. Anyways, Craig and Zara are donezo, and Craig tells the rest of his friends and lets them know, surprise, he has a daughter. And Duffy, he acts like an ass after Tabby gives him harsh but honest feedback on his horrible book, but has a come-to-Jesus moment when he realizes that none of his friends actually made it through the 1,400-page saga and asks Tabby for forgiveness and to help him turn the good part of the book into a short story. They share a tepid kiss. Ainsley and Gemma hit the rocks after Ainsley flakes on Gemma one too many times. Quentin, after a day of pampering with his wife, secretly goes over to Ainsley and demands she make amends with his wife. She does, and it's a good thing, because that evening, we sadly find out what our funeral will be when Gemma starts heading for bed and realizes that Quentin, who's laying down on the bed, is actually not sleeping, but dead.
You're a grand old corpse, you're a high-flying corpse, and forever in peace may you lay.
Okay, that's a super sad way to end, and damn, a lot of stuff happened in that episode. It's no wonder my script was so long. And that's what happened last week on Four Weddings and a Funeral.
Only, Karen, I think you missed a couple of spots. I'm just kidding. That was thorough and wonderful. Thank you.
Uh-huh. I tried. I tried. I wouldn't be surprised if I did, though, because I was just like, damn, a lot of stuff happened that episode. I'm like, apparently I get all the episodes that just have all of, like, the transitional hardness in them.
This one seems pretty jam-packed, and so does the next one after that. Mm-hmm. So maybe it's just a theme in this series.
We picked a series that was just meaty. Meaty boys after meaty boys.
Mm-hmm. I totally think we could do White Lotus after this with these meaty boys. Corinne might kill me, but that's the one I was like, oh, White Lotus.
Hey, I'm down. She's gone with me on the Four Weddings and a Funeral. I'll do the White Lotus for you. Poor Vu.
I'm going to take you to a questionable resort where people die and fuck each other.
Great.
Are you ready? Get your passport.
Choo-choo. Sign me up. That's what I did. I went to the gynecologist and I got like a pap smear. It was a whole lot of fun. And she's like, hey, do you want like STD testing? And I said, yes, because I know how to have fun. And she gave me a look and I was like, I'm talking about having the fun of STD testing. I'm not talking about like going out and getting STDs.
Worth it.
So, Tamara, on that note...
Mm. Mm-hmm.
Are you ready to take us on the journey so that we find out what the fun in funeral is?
Mm-hmm. Because I know how to have a good time, like my bestie Corinne.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Ah, the fun in funeral. We open with an ambulance on the street in front of Gemma's house. Ainsley has her hands laid comfortingly on Gemma's shoulder, while Craig, Duffy, and Maya stand behind and watch in solidarity. Quentin's covered body is loaded onto the vehicle. He's gone. A heartbroken Gemma goes inside and tries to beckon her Russell Terrier dog, Harvey, inside, but Harvey refuses to leave the sidewalk. Aww. Then we get a sad montage of Gemma trying to live her life without her husband, tidying, brushing her hair, and finally greeting her tearful son Giles home from boys' school. Giles forlornly shuffles into the house, but when he beckons Harvey, the dog finally follows and leaves his loyal post on the sidewalk, waiting for his owner, who's never coming home because he was taken entirely too soon by an aneurysm.
Aww.
I thought it was alcohol-related, but there you go.
I know, I did too. And then I was like, oh, an aneurysm. Great, okay. A little later, the fearsome foursome of friends meet for drinks at a quiet pub to ponder the loss and find solace in each other. Duffy recollects, one time I saw Quentin fall off a second-story balcony and walk away unscathed. I thought that guy was invincible. Ainsley adds, he was such a sweet guy. Craig is wallowing in his own loss and ponders, I wonder who would mourn me if I died. Probably just my trainer, Raul. The friends ask if he still hasn't heard from Zara, and I'm like, dude, all of his friends would mourn him. Hello? Who are you sitting at the table with? People who
they
love
didn't
you.
Say that. They didn't say that, though. That's the funny part. They're like, yes, have you heard from Zara? They don't, like, argue his point. They're like, Craig is wallowing in his pity pool again. We're not jumping in with them this time, right? They gave each other a look. I saw that look.
So, yes, as Tamara said, the friends ask him if he still hasn't heard from Zara, and Craig confirms he hasn't and says, it's like she fell off the face of the earth or something. Duffy reminds him, well, you did hide a whole human being from her. Ainsley interrupts to remind everyone about the funeral service on Sunday, and Maya gets a little squeegee and tells the group, I don't think I'm going to go to the funeral. I mean, I hardly knew Quentin, and I think it would be weird. Ainsley looks at her incredulously, but Maya ignores her glare and gets up for another round of drinks, deftly avoiding further explanation.
And that's when I would get up and be like, I'm coming with you, bitch, because we need to talk about this. The next day at work, Maya finds Marcus asleep with his head on his work desk. Maya is surprised to see him there, and a surly Marcus explains that since he's only getting half a salary, he had to acquire new roommates who incidentally are in a steel drum band. So being at work is the quietest place right now. She says, sorry, not sorry, but Andrew's office was the only job she had. She looks as if she's going to give him a suck it up speech because she is a talented speechwriter after all, but Marcus seems to have a change of heart and declares, we're both talented writers, and I believe we both deserve full salaries. Andrew's coming in 3 hours. I say we unite our fronts and demand that we get paid what we're worth. Maya is 100% on board and surprised that she's found an ally in a former enemy. But that afternoon when Andrew arrives, the pair march into his office as a united front? Question mark. Maya proclaims, Andrew, we believe that we both should be paid full salary. We both think half salaries are unethical and we demand to get paid what we're worth. Andrew sneers at Maya and Marcus and says, wee, with all these wees, I feel like I'm in Paris. Marcus, do you share her sentiment? Marcus shakes his head and says, oh, dear God, no. I just came in here to remind you that you're meeting with your constituents on Sunday.
Ooh, threw her bastard under the bus. Threw her under the bus.
Ugh, Marcus. Maya's face falls as she realizes she's been had, and Andrew directs his attention back at her and suggests, if you're unhappy with the work situation, I encourage you to resign.
Ugh.
But Maya will not resign in spite of Marcus's little stunt. She just knows now that she cannot trust him at all like she can trust him before, but she really can't trust him now.
Across town at Gemma's house, Quentin's parents, Mr. and Mrs. Thorpe Blood, have arrived.
You've got to say it more haughtily. Mr. and Mrs. Thorpe Blood.
Ooh, thank you. That was very good. They are rich and stuffy and pretentious, as you would imagine old British money to be. They are dictating all the details of Quentin's funeral, much to Gemma's surprise.
If they plan it, it's not going to be a funeral, Corinne. I'm just saying.
Why? But let me list this stuff off for you, Tam. You're gonna okay. totally change okay. your mind.
I'm sorry. I jumped the gun. Go ahead.
They will have the service at their local parish and the wake at their estate.
Party, party.
And of course, there will be a reading of the epic nautical poem, The Barnacle's Lament.
That poem slaps so
hard, right? And then, okay, so we're going to put a pause on the excitement, but we'll get back to it. Don't you worry. Just keep that seatbelt on, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So Gemma protests, I thought we'd have the service here. And Quentin's father scoffs. In Notting Hill, this is a funeral, not a carnival. Giles, who has been...
Notting Hill's carnival town. I did not know that. I love that statement because I'm like, Notting Hill's carnival town? Carnival? They have that at Notting Hill? I didn't think that was the big party spot, but I guess I was wrong.
Well, you know, it's a little like low class. It's a little more casual.
Well, it just so happens to be Hugh Grant's favorite part of London, of Britain. London, is it in London?
I don't know. Yeah, England. I think it's like a suburb. You know, I mean, like a neighborhood. Yeah.
Well, Hugh Grant loved it in his movie Notting Hill that we covered previously.
Yes. Giles, who's been silent the whole time, pipes up in defense of Tamara, says, it sounds boring. Do I have to go? Gemma rubs his hand tenderly and says, yes, of course you do, darling. And in an effort to make a personal stamp on all the planning Gemma offers, I can say a few words too at the service if you think it's appropriate. And see, now let's go back to the fun service. The parents exchange a look and nod definitively. That's perfect. We did need somebody to announce the bagpipes. See, there's going to be bagpipes there. Fun.
Mm. You know, I was going to say it almost sounds like the best party, except there's no bagpipes. And now here they are.
Done.
Hear the bagpipes.
Done and done.
At the tail end.
Yes.
The punctuation at the end of that party.
And don't you worry, Tam. At your wedding, I am going to get you the finest bagpipe player that there is.
Wedding bagpipe players.
When you walk down the aisle, it's just going to be magnificent.
Do the hustle. Do the hustle.
Down the aisle to the hustle on the bagpipe. I'll sing you in. Don't you worry. Don't you worry.
Oh, no. No. Please don't.
This is not exactly what Gemma had in mind, but she's happy to be included. A short while later, Gemma, looking for a reprieve, goes to Ainsley's house for a cup of tea. Ainsley is surprised to hear about the stuffy funeral arrangements and asks, are you okay with that? It sounds so impersonal and not very Quentin. Gemma glares at her friend and explains, it's how the Thorpebloods have done funerals for generations. And tradition is very important in this country. I mean, do you think 2-foot fur hats are the best way to guard the queen? No, but it's tradition. Such a good line. Mindy Kaling and Matt Warburton wrote this, but I see Mindy Kaling's comedic stamp all over this in so many different lines. And it's just that they're delivered in the other people's authentic voices. So it doesn't seem so much like it. But when you think about Mindy Kaling saying the exact same thing, you're like, oh yeah, there it is. Oh, there it is. Anyways, yeah.
I always wondered that too. I'm like, why are you guarding the queen wearing that? Especially when it's hot and they like keel over and pass out from heat exhaustion.
Oh my God.
Because they're wearing wool uniforms and big fur hats.
Oof. No, thank you. No, thank you.
But I do agree that line is exceptional.
Ainsley relents and looks at her friend tenderly while saying, I just want to make sure you're okay with it because you only get to do this once. Which, not exactly true because you can like do a funeral service whenever you want and you can have like remembrance days and whatnot. However, you know, you only get the first funeral for free once. Yes. That's why we waited a year to do my sister's.
Yeah.
Because we had to do it right.
A lot of fun planning in that one.
Bagpipes, barnacles lament.
No, Next, we see Cash in a mosque at morning prayer with his father Harun and brother Asif. Once prayer has concluded, everyone is saying their farewells, but Harun requests, "Before we go, should we say hello to Imam Iqbal? Since Papa almost died the week prior, Cash is happy to oblige." But inside the office, after some cordial greetings, the prayer leader tells Cash, "I sincerely hope we're going to see more of you in the masjid." I am so sorry if I say that wrong. Cash responds, "Oh, I prefer to handle my religion in a more private setting. It's very personal to me." The imam smiles knowingly and says, "Ah, just like your Instagram post at the pie-eating contest during Ramadan."
Uh-oh.
Cash sinks a little bit into his chair as his little brother's eyes widen and he mutters, "Oh, man, imams are on Instagram now? I've got some deleting to do."
It was after sunset for the pie-eating contest, I'm sure. Absolutely.
Really? Then those lights were fucking bright because it looked like it was about 12 o'clock in the afternoon. I don't know. We don't see the pictures. I'm just assuming. Anyways, but the elders pay Asif no mind and get to the task at hand. The imam brings over his binder and explains, "Your father told me you're in the market for an arranged marriage."
Ooh.
Cash eyes his father, who is smiling and nodding happily. Cash denies this. "I don't want an arranged marriage. I want love and fireworks." The imam eyes him seriously and warns, "Fireworks can blow your fingers off."
Ooh.
And Harun adds, "Kashif, I almost died. I want to see you married, and look how well it wound up when you were out there fending for yourself."
Mm.
Cash grabs the binder and flips through the pages, stating, "You really think I'm going to find true love with someone like..." He searches a random page and reads, "A girl named Fatima, who's 27, a corporate accountant that went to Oxford, loves listening to Drake?" Cash's voice trails off a bit as he continues reading, "and is quite beautiful." The imam happily plucks the page from the binder and hands it to Cash, encouraging him to just take it, perhaps for later. And he does.
Later that afternoon, Craig is on the hunt for Zara. He stops by her friend's apartment and knocks on the door. A young black woman answers the door and Craig greets her warmly. "Hello, Rosie." Her face twists into a sneer when she realizes who it is, and she calls over her shoulder, "Oi, look who decided to show a sorry face." A blonde and a redhead file behind her, and all glare at Craig menacingly. The blonde says, "You've a lot of nerve coming here unless you want an acrylic lodged in your eye." Craig ignores this and pleads, "I just need to find Zara. I haven't been able to get a hold of her, and I'm really worried." Rosie crosses her arms and says sarcastically, "Oh, yeah, I'll give the precise locality of our Zara to the man who was lying to her face. Are you having a laugh?" Craig's face brightens. "So you do know where she is?" The redhead chimes in, "Maybe we do, maybe we don't. But the point is, female friendship is the strongest force on earth. We stick together like the Spice Girls." "Yeah, we do." Craig has had enough, and finally his friendly demeanor drops as he curtly informs them, "The Spice Girls who famously broke up?" The blonde almost shouts, "And then reunited." Rosie adds a little calmer, "The point is, Isara's safe, so stop worrying about her. And even if we did want to tell you where she was, we couldn't from a legality perspective." His face scrunches into confusion as he demands, "What's that supposed to mean?" But all he gets in response is them calling him a twat and slamming the door in his face.
It's a word I need to work into my vocabulary more. Twat. 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 It's fun to say. Twat.
You know, it's so funny because, like, British slang, a lot of it's, like, super dirty. Like, I didn't realize that a wanker was somebody who masturbated until much further along in my life history. And then, like, fanny flutters are when your vajay gets all a tingly.
Fanny flutters, but that's not your fanny. I think
that's the British
titled.
Fanny.
Oh, that's what they call the fanny, the hoo-ha's, the British fanny.
Exactly. So when Brits are like, "Hear us say fanny," they think vajay fanny. They aren't thinking bootay fanny.
Oh my gosh, that's so interesting. Yay, progress! I guess we're all moving backwards here in America, right? At the same time, Jenna's at home being confronted by Quentin's parents. They've noticed that Giles has been despondent, not eating, and has been wearing the same filthy football jersey for days. Gemma's face falls and she explains, "Oh, that's my fault. I didn't put a new one out for him this morning. I'm not used to having him home." Papa Thornblood cuts right to the chase. I think it would be good for the boy to go back to Cragg's Cross right after the funeral. There's no better distraction than routine and hard work. And once he's back at school, he'll be studying and playing with his friends and forget about all this sadness. Because sadness is apparently like a cold that you can just get rid of after time and sunshine.
Well, yeah, okay. After my sister died, you told me to snap out of it. And I was like, thank you.
Yes, I told you to relax and lighten up. And as you well know, those phrases are magic.
Yes, they are. And suddenly I was like, oh my God, I'm having such a good time and I no longer feel sorrow. What the heck happened? Mm-hmm. You are a genius. Mm-hmm.
I do recall that vividly. Yes, you called me and said my sister passed away. And I said, I'll be right there. And then 6 hours later, I was knocking on your door. And right when you cracked it open, I said, relax, don't do it. When you gonna come to it? Relax, don't do it. When your sister dies.
When your sister dies.
Doon, doon, doon. See, and it worked magically because you were like totally happy. The rest of the visit was like sunshine and roses. It was so fun.
I know. It's amazing.
Anyways, Gemma's face falls with the realization of what they're asking, and Ma Thornblood drives the point home by saying, we think it would be best for Giles. And really, is him staying home better for him or better for you?
Fuck right off,
Does
lady.
Doesn't matter. Yeah, fuck both of you right off.
Seriously. That's what I meant. Fuck y'all off. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Take it in the wanker. I mean, what was the word for ass that was wrong?
Fanny?
Take it in the fanny!
A little later at Craig's office, he's regaling the wannabe Spice Girl altercation to Cash. He recounts, they said all would be revealed in time. I swear it's like being in front of a coven of spray tan witches. Cash offers, maybe she'll show up to the funeral. Craig nods and asks, are you going? Cash is torn. He wants to go to pay his respects, but he also doesn't want to upset Ainsley any more than he already has. Craig switches gears and asks, do you have those projections for George? Cash hands him a thick file folder, and out of it drops Fatima's dating profile. Craig picks it up, chuckling, ooh, are you hiring an assistant? Because she is too hot. Cash grabs the page back and explains, my father's trying to set up an arranged marriage with this girl from my mosque. Is that crazy? Craig smirks knowingly at his friend and says, well, I don't know. I didn't expect much when my barber set me up with his niece, but that's how I met Zara.
So, series, whatever. Cash mulls over this information and then heads outside to make a call. He phones Fatima and discovers that not only is she beautiful, like her photo, but quick and witty.
She's awesome.
Yeah, she's pretty good. After some awkward greetings, Cash reveals his intentions and how he got her number from the imam. She responds, well, I figured, why else would a young person be calling on a landline? Cash chuckles and asks if she's gone on many dates through the mosque. And Fatima nods and informs him, a few. It's better than the dating apps. The last date I went on from Tinder showed up to the restaurant with bare feet. Cash is more and more intrigued the longer the conversation goes. So he proposes, would you like to go on a date with me, say, sometime next week? I promise I'll wear socks. Fatima declines, you know, next week's so far off. How about tonight? Around 8, I'm free. Cash is thrown off by her forwardness, agrees to the date, and hangs up before finding out where they're meeting. He calls back immediately, and without him saying anything, she just tells him to meet her at the mall, and he's elated. A mall date. Interesting. Interesting. Mm-hmm.
You know, you get some hot dog on a stick lemonade, you get a nice cheesy pretzel, like, just living the life.
Those are the two things you could do at the mall. You can't go shopping with your date. I mean, unless that's too intimate on the first date. Oh, look, Victoria's Secret.
I know. Like, shopping for lingerie, no. But, like, regular shopping, like, whatever. But anyways. At the same time, back at Duffy's boys' school, he runs into Tabby and is elated. Earlier that week, he informed her that he was going to send a short story that she helped him edit to The New Yorker. The 20 pages out of these 1400 page beast that he wrote that were worth salvaging. And so he got a response back. They are going to publish it. The couple celebrates.
Yay!
his triumphant induction into being published, and Duffy proclaims, "It's all because of you. They're only releasing it on the summer digital webpage, but I like that better because it saves tree." Sure, Duffy. Say whatever. Mm-hmm. A win is a win, though. Like, super exciting. Yep. Duffy looks deeply into her eyes and adds, "I love that you read my book. I love that you were so direct with me about what you thought. I love..." While he's searching for the next word, she briskly adds, "I love you too," and kisses him on the mouth and rushes off to class. Duffy looks after her with an expression that says, "That's not what I was going to say." But now it's too late because she's off. Whew. Tabby, you deserve so much better than fucking Duffy. I'm just going to put that out there right now.
So funny, because in a lot of segments with her that we left out because of time, like, he'll be prattling on about his book and she'll be like, "Duffy, enough." Like, she'll just cut him off on his shit because she's like, "So I see where you're going and you want to talk ad nauseum about your stupid book, and I'm just going to stop you right there because I don't have time for it."
Yeah.
So I wonder secretly if she knew that he wasn't saying "I love you," but she wanted to say it first and just like shoved it in there.
Yeah.
Like a hand in the fanny.
She's somebody who leads with her heart, and I really like that about her.
Mm-hmm.
You like that about her too? To mention I'm going to be around for very much longer.
Later that evening, Gemma is over at Ainsley's house, showing her the dress that she's going to wear to Quentin's service. Ainsley can tell that something is weighing on Gemma's mind, but her friend insists that she's fine and that she needs to go back home to make sure Giles is packing because he's off to Scotland after the funeral. Maya happens to wander downstairs and asks, "Isn't that a little soon? I was around Giles' age when I lost my mother, and after the funeral, the only thing I wanted for the longest time was to be with my father." Gemma parrots Quentin's parents' statement about school and structure and being a good distraction, causing Maya to point out that adults need distraction, kids need to feel loved and safe.
Aww.
Gemma tells her thanks, but she knows how to raise her son and leaves in a huff.
In a huff.
That's the worst thing, when somebody you don't like makes a good point. I don't have to listen to you. I'm going home.
I like to feel loved and safe, too. And I'm an adult. Just saying. Back in her own house, Giles's grandparents are sitting on the couch. They've just had supper, and Gemma asks if her son has eaten. The Thornbloods admit that he wasn't hungry and has been holed up in his room the whole evening. This concerns Gemma, so she hurries up to his room, calling out, "I hope you started packing. No Spider-Man until you're done." But she doesn't get a response, because when she opens the door, what does she see? Find out with us after the break. And we're back. Gemma discovers that Giles is not there. But there is an open window, the curtain blowing in the wind. He's run away. Gemma immediately calls the police, and when they come and ask questions like, where does he like hanging out? And are there any friends that he might have gone to see? She realizes that she can't answer any of it and can only say, "I don't know, my son's in boarding school most of the year." This realization makes her feel like even more of a mess. But her phone rings, and when she answers it, her demeanor changes with relief. For thinking fucks in heaven. Because whoever is on the other line knows where Giles is, and he's safe. And I'm like, where is he? Where is he? I want to know.
I know. At that moment, when I had to cut it because it was the next section, I'm like, I'm going to try really hard to make this sound like it's not a ransom note situation. I know where your son is. Bring $20,000 of unmarked bills to the trash can. Around 8 p.m. that evening, Cash waits nervously in the middle of the mall before Fatima spots him and saunters over. They make friendly introductions, and Cash admits, "Oh, I haven't been on a mall date since I was 15. Fatima nods and explains, "I like to take my first dates here. It's best to size guys up under fluorescent lights so you're not surprised later." Cash is amused, and even more so when an elderly lady glides over in her electric wheelchair and says in Urdu, "And if the date goes pear-shaped, my granddaughter takes me to KFC so the night's not a complete loss." Cash answers, "I recognize that voice from the phone. Nice to meet you, auntie." And he bows politely. Fatima makes introductions. This is her nanny, aka grandmother, and her chaperone, and asks, "Is yours running late?" Cash realizes the breach of protocol he's just made and nervously responds, he's running late. Let me just text him and see what's going on. He quickly ducks away and texts his friend Bashir. What are you doing right now? Bashir is ordering dinner at a food cart and is thrilled to hear from his old friend and writes back, Oi, waiting for you to text me, mate. Cash explains his predicament and asks Bashir to chaperone, and DJ Foreplay is beep, 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 all in. He excitedly cancels his order, saying, forget all this shit, lady, I gotta go, and heads straight to the mall. Yay! And to his friend's rescue.
Oh, Bashir. Cash doesn't deserve Bashir. Bashir is so good. Oh my gosh. Bashir and Tabby together.
I'm trying to picture that. I really am. I don't think it would work, but that would be fun to watch.
Bashir gets to the mall in record time and winds up really hitting it off with the grandmother, which gives Cash and Fatima ample time to get to know each other. Cash decides he needs to come clean and informs his date, I just want to let you know that I'm in finance, but I hate my job and I want to be an actor. And I recently got out of a relationship, actually left my fiance at the altar. Fatima looks forward seriously and says, I really can't believe that. Cash nervously states, if that's a deal breaker, I totally understand. Fatima corrects, No. I just can't believe that you think anyone in Hounslow didn't hear about your wedding imploding. It's perfect fodder for all the aunties to warn about the dangers of dating outside of the faith. Cash asks her, so that doesn't bother you? Fatima does a great job balancing a playful look with a little condescension in it when she says, so you hate your job and you have a failed love life? Welcome to adulthood. She goes on to admit that she doesn't love being an accountant, but it pays for her froyo addiction. Cash is relieved and pulls out his best dad joke and proclaims, well, I guess you could call that accounting for taste. Ha 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 ha.
No, Cash, no. No.
Her face falls at the bad joke, but she slaps him playfully, and they only get a few more steps before Nanny accuses in Urdu, those shoes look like they have lifts in them. Make sure that he takes them off so we know his true height. Fatima eyes him mischievously because half of her wants to know if that's true, and the other half doesn't want to see another shoeless date. Ooh, that was a good line.
Across town, Gemma's racing into a sports apparel shop. She rushes up to the employee at the counter and asks, I'm looking for a little boy. He good-naturedly says, well, luckily we have one of those in stock. And brings her over to the corner where Giles is sitting on the clothes rack, hanging his head and crying. Gemma embraces him and gushes, I was so worried about you. Don't ever run away, ever again. Giles explains, Grandpa threw away my Chelsea jersey and I had to go buy another one before Dad's funeral.
Fuck, Grandpa. Are you serious?
It was dirty, Corinne. It was filthy. He was wearing it for 3 whole days.
Okay, you know what? You know what, Tamara? I just have to explain. There's this thing. It's called a washing machine. You put dirty clothes into it. And then it agitates them with water and soap. And then it rinses them off. And then
agitate?
And then it cleans the dirty clothes so that you can wear them once again instead of just throwing them away.
Cleans the clothes? That's a thing?
I know that you just wear your stuff once and then you throw it away because, you know.
Well, no, I know. I know what a washing machine is. I just don't think the Thornbloods know what a washing machine is. Much like Tony One, who, I just have my boyfriend do it because the washer and the dryer look so alike.
I can't tell them apart. Yeah, no, I'm just like, oh, I would be reading Grandpa the Riot Act and telling him to get the fuck out of my house. Like, if he did that to my child's very important jersey that reminded him of his father, and his father just died. No, that's not okay. Not okay. The buck stops here.
These blue bloods are just like, let's push the sadness down, deep, deep down, and get rid of all of the elements of it. Does that remind you of a father? It must go.
You must keep a stiff upper lip.
Mm-hmm. Ugh. Gemma informs Giles that grandmother has already picked out his outfit and he can't wear a soccer jersey to a funeral. It would be inappropriate. Giles is heartbroken and argues, I have to wear the jersey. Dad loved Chelsea and the funeral sounds so boring. Dad hated boring things. I want to wear something that he would like.
Aww.
Gemma hugs her son and her face reflects a realization that maybe properness and tradition aren't the best things after all, Gemma. You're sacrificing your son's sanity to accommodate these old stuffy people.
Who you aren't even reliant on for money because you're actually wealthy on your own. But mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, I understand her, like, wanting to accommodate them to some extent. However, also, fuck right off. Yeah.
And they're not accommodating her at all.
Exactly.
They're like, this is how it's going to be done, and you need to listen to us. So if the door is swaying both ways, I could see,
yeah,
you know, a little give and take. But they're just coming in, both barrels blazing, like, this is how we do it, and you better fall in line or fall behind. It just sucks.
Well, and Gemma wanted to say something about, share some memories about her husband, and they're like, no, no, you can introduce the bagpipe player. And I'm like, excuse me? Wait, what? You're telling me, for my husband, that I all have the great privilege of introducing the bagpipe player. Great. Thank you. No.
Mm-hmm.
Nope, nope.
Don't give me a microphone. If you put me anywhere near a microphone, I'm going to say what I want.
At the same time, Duffy, perhaps in search of another adult-sized bathtub, is at Ainsley's house and finds Maya typing away on her computer. He stands there expectantly for a second before proclaiming, I haven't told you my good news, have I? Maya's face searches his for a moment before she exclaims happily, you finally got that mole removed? Oh, I'm so relieved. Duffy's face scrunches and he asks, why does everyone keep saying that? Because previously, Tabby incorrectly guessed the same thing when he broke the good news to her.
I want to see that mole now.
I know.
I really want to see that mole.
Seriously.
It's in the shape of Australia and it's growing.
Yay! If your mole is the size of a continent, you really need to get it looked at. Just saying.
Mm-hmm.
Pro tip. Duffy clarifies, no, I'm getting published in the New Yorker. Maya effuses, oh my God, Duffy, I'm so proud of you. And they share a warm embrace, but it's short-lived because Maya picks her computer back up and promises, as soon as I finish catching up with work, I will totally read it. When Duffy finds out she's working that Sunday, he asks, but Sunday's Quentin's funeral, are you not going? Maya confirms that, yes, I barely just got this job. I'm not going to ask for time off already. Duffy can read between the lines and says, do you want to talk about it? Is this about your mother? Her face hardens and she says, it's not about my mother and I don't want to talk about it. Duffy relents and sadly looks on as she busies herself with work.
Oh, Maya, you got a bad poker face.
Mm-mm.
That Sunday, Maya is at Andrew Aldridge's meeting with his constituents. An elderly lady sits across from the politician and proclaims that she doesn't know why she can't charge her landlord for being a peeping Tom just because she answers the door naked. Thank you for that line. Andrew dismisses Maya and seems irritated with her that this is the first meeting she set up. Maya takes refuge in the hallway and Marcus pipes up, off your game today, I see. I took the liberty of looking at the want ads, and it seems that Mama's Shrimp Dump is hiring. I think that would be a perfect fit for you. Maya jeers, what is your problem? And Marcus, reiterates all the things he's had to endure since taking a half salary because of her.
Yes.
But he's interrupted by Duffy, who stopped on his way to the funeral because something was really nagging him. He pulls Maya aside and asks, have you been to a funeral since your mother passed away? Maya sadly confirms this and Duffy admits, I kind of already knew that because you didn't go to your grandmother's funeral. I did. I was the only white guy there and I kept clapping on the one and the three. Maya chuckles and admits, I can't go to the funeral. It would just make me too sad. My mom's funeral was the worst day of my life. Duffy encourages her to go be sad because he'll be right alongside of her being sad too.
Aww.
And Maya surprisingly agrees and just has to go home to change. She rounds the corner, ready to plead with Marcus, but he's heard everything and says dismissively, go, I'll cover for you.
Aww.
Maya's dubious, though, because he has fucked her over before.
Uh-huh.
And says, you sure you're not going to sell me out to Andrew? Marcus's eyes twinkle mischievously as he stands and says, "Well, you're just going to have to trust me, but you never know. This funeral may be your funeral." But Maya does go, and spoiler, Marcus does cover for her and is surprisingly honorable when Andrew asks, "Do we believe her, or does she just need an excuse to celebrate one of those intolerable American holidays?" Marcus vouches for her and convinces their boss that she did have an actual funeral to go to. Good on you, Marcus.
Yeah.
At the actual funeral, Tabby, Duffy, Ainsley, and Craig arrive together and are only seated for a moment when Craig's phone pings with the text that says, "It's Poppy, Zara's second best friend. Call me now." All in caps. Krug.
What's up, Krug?
Craig rushes out. But when he gets Poppy on the phone, she just prattles on about how a CCTV camera fell on her ankle and she's sure to get a big payday from the government. Craig finally demands, "I'm at a funeral. Can you tell me where Zara is?" Poppy responds cryptically, "I can't due to legalities, but I can tell you to make sure you're home tonight at 8 and all will be revealed." Craig's confused, but Poppy hangs up, so he heads back into the church just in time to hear Papa Thorpeblood's very dull rendition of the Barnacle's lament poem. But he doesn't, nor do any of his friends, see Maya sneak into the side door and take a back pew next to Cash while mumbling, "Sorry, this is the only seat available." But at the front pew, Gemma seems buried deep in thought when Giles nudges her and says, "It's your turn. Good luck, Mom."
When the friends all sat down in the pew, Duffy was like, "Make sure to make room for Maya." And they're like, "Are you sure she's coming?" And he was like, "Yeah, she's coming." And they're like, "Okay." And then they make absolutely no room for Maya in the pew.
Yeah. I think they're still like a little bitter about the funeral absences, I guess.
Gemma takes the podium and addresses the church, thanking the Thorpebloods for including so many of their family traditions. And although she was supposed to introduce the bagpipes, and at that point the bagpiper's like, "Oh, yay, here's my moment.
It's my time to shout." No, not now. Not okay. Stand down.
She wanted to instead share a few of her and Quentin's small family traditions. She proclaims a costume change and puts on a Chelsea football jersey over her funeral dress and directs everyone to look under your chair. You get a Chelsea jersey, you get a Chelsea jersey, and you get a Chelsea jersey.
I thought that was such a sweet sentiment, but at the same time, the camera panned over to fucking Tabby and Duffy putting them on. And I'm like, how did you know what size they were? Because Tabby's a full like foot smaller than Duffy and probably a medium or small. And Duffy's probably like an extra long tall. But all the jerseys fit beautifully on everybody. Go figure.
I totally thought the same thing. And I also was like, oh, because Maya was like kind of trying to fix her hair after she put hers on. And I was like, yeah, I bet that's happening to other people too.
No. It fits perfectly for everybody. Everybody's hair is gorgeous and doesn't get mussed because it's a funeral miracle.
Yes, it's a funeral miracle. Exactly.
A funeral miracle. God damn it, so hard to say. Funeral miracle. God bless us, everyone.
Put in the fun in funeral. Yes, so everybody gets a Chelsea jersey and people chuckle as they put them on and Gemma continues a little more confidently. "Let me tell you about something Quentin loved. The Chelsea Football Club. Nothing made him happier or more angry. On game days, I had to pre-apologize to the neighbors for the fireworks he would shoot off of our roof if Chelsea won, or the volume of profanities if they lost." Did you do that when you were with your ex? Did you pre-apologize to your neighbors?
No. Thankfully, it was in Hollywood, and we had a rotation of people, so much so that we didn't live around or next people so for very long periods of time. Because if I had to apologize for anything, it would probably be the 3 fucking barbecue smokers that we had on the 4th floor of our teeny tiny balcony. And he would smoke meats at length. And probably the whole 5th floor was hickory scented by the time we moved out.
Gemma continues, "I'm afraid I'm really going to miss Quentin saying, 'Is the roof blind or is his head just up his arse?' And even though I'm up here to introduce the family hymn, which Quentin hated, by the way, I'm going to ask the quartet to play his favorite." And it goes over the bagpiper and he's like, "Oh, quartet. Like, the little thing pops out of his mouth, and he's like, I'm sad now.
I can play this conk song. I can play ABBA.
Playing The Winner Takes It All by ABBA. I remember our first date when that song played, and Quentin said, I think ABBA is way better than the Bloody Beatles. And I will agree with Quentin. I love ABBA, and in honor of Quentin, today at work, I played ABBA Radio on Spotify. Cash and Maya exchange amused glances since they have their ABBA connection through the movie that of name.
Mamma Mia.
Thank you. Mamma Mia. I'm like, of the name, I can't remember. But Tamara knows. Mamma Mia, here we go again. But that's not The Winner Takes It All. Gemma concludes her speech by saying, the one thing I'm going to miss most about Quentin is what he brought out in me, and that's what I wish for all of you. Somebody who makes you the best version of yourself and who you can't imagine living without. She raises a glass of scotch and asks all the guests to join her. Attendants pass out glasses, and she toasts to Quentin Thorpeblood, a man as exciting as a Chelsea soccer game, as enchanting as an ABBA song, and as intoxicating as a bottle of scotch. The toast concludes with Gemma asking Giles to make one final statement on his dad's behalf. Giles happily stands on his pew seat, raises his arm in the air, and says, Arsenal sucks! Loudly. Everyone snickers, and Gemma directs everyone to repeat the chant, and the whole church raises their fists and repeat, Arsenal sucks!
I didn't put it in this outline, but right when Gemma was talking about that, do not get yourself somebody who you can't live without. Mm-hmm. Duffy snuck a look over his shoulder and looked at Maya for a couple of beats, even though Tabby was sitting right next to him.
Fucking Duffy, man. He's such a wanker. And I do not get fanny flutters when I think about him. Cash? Sure. Craig, for a fun time call? Yes. Duffy, fuck right off. No. After the service, Gemma finds Quentin's parents, who remark that Giles seems in way better spirits. I wonder why. Maybe because he's being acknowledged as a person with, like, feelings, huh?
Mm-hmm. And he was able to honor his father in a way that he thought was appropriate.
Yeah, and meaningful. And in a totally harmless way. Like, didn't hurt anybody.
By golly. He said sucks in our family parish. Oh my god.
Papa Thorpeblood asks, is Giles all ready to go back to Craig's Cross on Sunday? Gemma admits that he's not returning on Sunday and then clarifies that he's not returning at all, because she wants him with her in London. This infuriates her father-in-law as he proclaims loudly, I just donated a language lab. Which I'm just like, did you need to donate a language lab? Because Giles seems like a pretty good kid. Like, he's not somebody that you need to buy a language lab for the school so that they will stay, you know, in whatever. Anyways.
Well, let me explain something to you, Corinne. See, what happens is very rich people have a hard time finding ways to spend their money in exorbitant ways.
Oh.
Therefore, sometimes they donate buildings just for the heck of it, and mostly so they can get their name on it. So,
you know, I will let a rich person put their name on a building, and if they can give it to me, I will call it Channing Tatum's house or Papa Thornblood's mansion, and I will happily own it and take residence of it and just refer to it exclusively that way.
I will pass on the word.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
To all my rich friends.
Doing God's work over here. Helping rich people spend their money. I can do it. I just donated a language lab, whatever that means. While Mama Thorpeblood asks, are you sure you're fit to be a single parent? You never even learned to change a nappy. I mean, what will people think? What will people think? They already call her dog food names, so I think that I think she has nowhere to go but up. Gemma's face stiffens as she says, well, thankfully he's potty trained, and I do not want to realize on my son's 18th birthday that I hardly know him, as she's already realized that she hardly knows her son right fucking now.
Mm-hmm.
And thankfully, your son taught me not to care what people think. Papa Thorpeblood can hear no more and leaves in a huff.
and half.
But interestingly, Mama Thorpeblood hangs back and says, to tell you the truth, Quentin hated Craig's Cross. I had to bribe him with chocolate hobnobs just to get him to go back every season. She gently pats Gemma's arm and walks away.
I had to look up what chocolate hobnobs were.
Oh, please do tell.
They're like chocolate-covered biscuits.
Oh.
And the British kind of biscuits. So just cookies, it looks like.
Oh.
Yeah, it wasn't exciting as I thought it was either. No. I'm like, oh, I wouldn't go back to school for those either.
No.
At the very end of the wake, everyone gathers outside. Maya and Cash are standing side by side when a fireworks display begins. Maya exclaims, oh, wow, fireworks. And Cash answers, yeah, they'll blow your hand off. This causes him to flash back, 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 back on a phone conversation that he had with the imam of his church. After his date with Fatima, the church leader encouraged him to have the families meet just to make sure they get along before marriage. This spooked the shit out of Cash, and he told the imam that things were moving too quickly and he did not wish to see Fatima again. But something in that funeral service or the fireworks changed his mind, and he rushes back to the mosque into his imam's office and gushes that he would like to see Fatima again, but he wants to take it slow. They just went on one date. He doesn't know if he wants to marry her, but he does want to spend more time with her.
Well, the fucking imam was like, okay, so now that you went on one date and you like each other, it's time for your families to meet. And he's like, wait, what?
Well, you see, but he's the arranged marriage pusher. He's like, oh, you like it? He's like the used car salesman of arranged marriages. Why don't you take it for a test drive? Why don't you take it home? Why don't you buy it today? That's his job. Cash asks, did you already tell Fatima that I didn't want to see her again? And the imam shakes his head slowly and says, surprisingly, breaking the hearts of young women is not on the top of my to-do list. And he agrees that they can go as fast or as slow as Cash would like. Yay. And Cash is elated as they sit down to plan his next steps, which are not going to be marriage. Spoiler.
But are going to be spending more time with the delightful, delightful Fatima. Yes.
Perhaps eating more froyo. That seems like it's likely in their future.
I like it. It's good. I'm not going to complain about froyo. Just bring it on by. That night, Craig is home and awaiting whatever is going to happen at 8 p.m. Inexplicably, he hears Zara's voice saying, hello, I'm here. Craig excitedly bounds into the living room, exclaiming, Zara, I'm so glad you're here. I've been so worried. But the room is empty. Instead, he realizes the voice he heard was coming from the television set. Zara has gotten herself onto a reality show based on the very popular reality show in the UK, Love Island. But this reality show is called Love Chalet, which is a dating show for young singles. And she tells the camera in her first interview, I'm Zara, I'm 28, and I'm looking for love. My heart was recently broken by my ex, who was a lying dickhead that kept secrets from me. Craig looks heartbroken as he watches her in the scene slip into a hot tub with two good-looking young men who are very eager to make her acquaintance.
At the same time, Maya's at Ainsley's, contemplating the evening. She pulls out an old photo from her wallet of a much younger her in the arms of her mother. Across the street, Gemma and Giles are having a heart-to-heart. She's checking in with her son that he's okay staying with her in London, and he's thrilled. He'd rather be there with her than at Craig's Cross. Then she recalls the questions the police asked her and repeats them to her son in an effort to get to know him, and learns that the place he loves hanging out at is the arcade. But she's also a bit concerned to find out that all of his friends are adults and makes a mental note to do a background check on all of them.
Mm-hmm. The owner of the arcade, or like the manager of the arcade, the butcher.
Yeah.
The like.
Yeah. Oh. Exactly. I'm like, oh, poor kid. Either he's just well beyond his years or he just doesn't have a lot of exposure to kids his own age. Well, which is weird because he's at a boys' school.
Yeah. I just think he's like a little bit of an odd duck and they probably just ignore him or whatever, you know.
Mm.
At the end of the night, it's pouring when Maya answers the door to find Duffy standing there, soaking wet. He's got a boombox over his head. And all my instincts, they return, and the grand facade so soon will burn. No. She urges him to come inside, saying, "What are you doing out here? Don't you know how dangerous British rain is? Haven't you read Pride and Prejudice?" He explains that he broke up with Tabby because he realized he didn't love her, no matter how hard he tried. He goes on to proclaim, "I know the timing isn't right on this, and I don't expect anything in return, but I have to tell you that I love you. I've loved you for 10 years, since the first time I saw you freshman year. And today, at the funeral, I thought to myself, what if I die? And I never have the chance to tell you how I feel. I would regret that for the rest of my life. I know I would be dead and all that, but I just don't want to go another day without telling you how I felt. So here I am." Maya mutters, "Duffy," and shakes her head slightly before rushing out and planting a wet, deep kiss on his lips. And it's a good one. And the credits roll. And I also have to point out that she was drinking before he came to the door.
And it was a good kiss, but it was also, "Oh, what are you doing?" kiss. Mm-hmm. So she kissed him good, but I'm like, "What are you doing? What are you doing? What are you doing? What are you doing?" That was a surprise to me. Oh my God.
Yeah, I was like, just take backs. I know it's been a while since you've been laid, but take backs. If I could turn back time.
I'm just going to venture a couple of guesses, Maya. Do you have 18 contact lenses in your eye that are thwarting your vision and you think that's cash? Is that what happened?
Yeah. Yeah.
So weird. So weird.
Not here for it. All right. So, Tamara, relationship breakdown time.
Mm-mm-mm. Okay, I'm going to start with Maya and Duffy because it's just weird. It's just weird. I know what just happened, but it doesn't feel right. I'm giving them a 1.5.
Oh, I give them 1 dry kiss. Do not recommend. Like, I think that Maya had too much to drink that night.
Yeah, I hate to say it's going to be a spoiler. If you don't want to know what happens, just say la 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 and cover your ears for the next 3 seconds, because it doesn't get much better.
Yeah.
I mean, they're together, but it's just woo.
Throughout the script that I've already started writing, I'm like talking about the spark that they have.
Wow, really?
No. Or rather the lack thereof.
Oh, okay. Yeah. That's more like it. That sounds more like it. Yeah.
Okay. Gemma and Quentin.
Well, I see they flatlined because he's dead.
I give it 5 dry kisses because it was very interesting getting more insight into their relationship in the process of all of this. Giles loved his dad, and apparently they did like spend some quality time together because Giles had a sense of what his dad was about and what his dad would have liked. And Gemma revealed how meaningful she was to him and they were to each other. And so they actually had a really beautiful love story, even though it was short-lived.
They glossed over that so well in the first couple of episodes. Mm-hmm. I'm like, who's this motherfucker? And then at this episode, you're like, oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ooh. How about Fatima and Cash? The buddings of new love, perhaps?
Mm-hmm. I give it 2.5.
Really?
I love Fatima. I love Cash. Unlike Maya and Duffy, which I love Maya, don't love Duffy. And I feel like there's like connection between them, but are they like sparking? Which, you know, like it's early on, but I would say like, I don't know if that spark is there, which is why they get a 2.5 instead of a 3 dry kiss, which is like kind of where they would be in like the middle of like the beginning stage of their relationship. So, yeah. So I give it 2.5 dry kisses, but only just because I feel like they're good, but the vibe I'm not sure is there. And Fatima's fantastic. Would love to hang out with her, along with Tamara, of course, obviously. So, yeah. What about
you? I'm going to give them 3 for the potential that they have.
Like it.
Although, it's kind of interesting, though, because when you see their dynamic, Fatima seems like, I could take it or leave it. The only thing that you saw that was her showing, like, genuine interest in Cash is when she's like, let's go out tonight. Why wait till next week? But I don't know if that was just her personality. But it's Cash seems way more into her, even though he just got out of a relationship and was like, I don't want an arranged marriage. I'm a, oh, who's this? Oh, yeah. And then he just seems like smitten with her time and time again, which is kind of sweet. even though I secretly want him to still end up with Maya. But I'm like, okay. I'll allow it. I'll allow you and Fatima this, you know, make it good. You know, something's gonna
happen. He needs a rebound before he's ready. That's, you know, that's what I'm going to say.
Yeah.
What about Zara and Craig? Zreg.
Oh, gosh. First of all, I want to know how she had his TV magically turn on at 8 p.m. Did she have it like TiVo'd on full blast? That's fucking diabolical. I'm here for it. I'm going to say there's like Craig and Zara are at a one.
Yes.
Because she is with other mans in the hot tub. Mm-hmm. But I will say that I got to respect Zara's girls looking out for her. So they get a 3.5, even though they're rude coven of bitches. They get 3.5 because they're wannabe Spice Girl coven.
Oh my gosh. I give Zara's second, third, and fourth best friend. I give them 4 dry kisses. They're fantastic. Okay. Yeah. They're looking out for their girl. And as they know, Craig, if you want to be my lover, you got to get with my friends. Mm-mm-mm.
And we don't want to have nothing to do with you. Can't say Tabby and Duffy because they're over. Over.
Tabby gets 5 dry kisses because she's amazing and she deserves better. And Tabby's relationship with herself is 5 dry kisses over her relationship with Duffy. So there you go.
Yeah, fair. Fair, fair, fair. Duffy just decreases her value.
Totally. And he basically essentially used her to edit his short story for him.
Yeah, but I secretly think that Duffy's stupid enough to think that he could have forced himself to love her. I don't think it was done with any sort of, I'm going to use you and then kick you to the curb type of mentality.
I didn't think he was going to kick her to the curb, but I did think he was more along the lines of, well, I can have her edit my book so she can be useful to me as a girlfriend. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Oh, we didn't talk about it. I'm so sorry we glossed over this, and this sucks because we have, of course, a time constraint. But Bashir and Nanny, fire.
Yes.
The grandmother chaperone and Bashir the chaperone.
5 dry kisses. Oh my gosh,
they had such a cute scene where she was telling him a story about a goat, and he was just like, ah, that's what he gets. It's so cute. Watch this episode for that spot alone.
Yes.
The bright spot in a dark, dark episode.
Mm-hmm. Do we have anything that we want to add to the 4 Musketeers of Diversity?
I don't think there's anybody else that showed up, except I wanted to know if the diabetes representation would be anywhere in our list.
Sure. Also, I would say that in this episode, they get more into Muslim culture, which I think is also good. So, Tamara, what do we have coming up next week?
We have more, more, more for Weddings and a Funeral, part 5.
Sweet. And if you have anything that you would like to say about all of the relationships, our undying love for Bashir, and my undying love for Tabby, you can reach out to us at onedrykiss@gmail.com or on the social medias on Insta or Facebook.
If you want to tell us to stop doing series and find something else, we might agree with you because we had a little snafu when we were doing, well, Corinne did, when she was editing and writing her outline and watching a show like consecutively and was just like, what the fuck, was it this episode or was that episode or was I supposed to hear it on this episode or was that an episode?
Today I worked on episode 4, 5, and 6. So yes. Yeah. I got a little confused.
Things get a little muddled.
Yeah.
So we are having a good time doing this series, but does have its shortcomings. Anyways. And as always, if you could find the time to rate and review us anywhere you listen to this podcast, we'd really appreciate it. But in the meantime, we'll thank you for stopping by and we'll bid you adieu with 1 dry kiss. Mwah. See you next time.
It's done.
At the actual funeral. Bree, bree. That's my bagpipes.
Beautiful.
Bree.